Professor Lisa, VIMBA. It's 11th March, podcast number 2, room number 206.
From your email and wherever else you see it, is our kickoff lecture of our Top 10 Research Workshop Series. And the reason that we call it Top 10, if I can find my handouts here, there's an article that was referenced in one of your emails, I hope. The Top 10 Things Law Librarians Wish New Associates Would Know. So for those of you, especially those of you planning to go out into firms, but whatever law practice, I think this will give you a good sense of really a true insider view. These are the law librarians that work with the brand and associates. So what we're going to do is we're starting out with our cost-efficient research and law practice survival tips. And to guide us through that, the reference librarians know we've all been in academia too long to really give you good insights. So to guide you along with that, we have Aurelia Sanchez, who is currently a reference librarian at the law firm of Rifkin Radler, which is just down the block a bit. She previously was the coordinator of reference services at Denver Morrison. And also with us today, Jim Murphy. Jim started as a trial lawyer specializing in medical malpractice, product liability, and personal injury defense in New York City and here on the island. Then he was a reference librarian and a professor teaching advanced legal research at Brooklyn Law. And then he left academia to begin a career in professional development at Dewey and LaBeouf. And now Jim heads his own legal research training and consultant practice in New York. So welcome to Jim and Aurelia. And they will, as I said, guide us through some cost-efficient tips as well as just tips on law practice survival. And hopefully they will also convince you to attend the remainder of our workshop series, which starts next week. And then we repeat it, same workshops the following week in case next week. And you can attend as many as you want. Come to a couple one week, a couple the other week. And if you can't make one in particular, they don't follow on one another, so they're each independent, so just come to as many as you like. And without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Jim.
Okay, good morning. The reason that they asked us, Aurelia and myself, to come to talk to you today is because we've worked in law firms, right? One of the first things we want to find out is about our audience, right, before we go into what you guys need to know about starting here as a summer associate, possible. All right? So by a show of hands, who's going to be a summer associate in a corporate law firm? In a government agency? All right, there you go. Okay, what do you think? Okay. All right. And are the rest of you first years? Second year? First years? Okay. And are you taking Lisa Spahr's advanced legal research course? Okay, that's good, because now you have an opportunity over the next couple of years to take the course. And I think Aurelia and I, as people who handled summer associates coming in and first-year associates coming into law firms, it's something we really wish that people coming into law firms would take. When I was a law school student, I didn't take advanced legal research, and I wish I had. When I was a professor at Brooklyn Law School, I taught advanced legal research, and in a survey that we would have after the class was over, what we consistently heard was it was one of the most useful courses that the students took, because the bottom line aim of a really good advanced legal research class is to teach you how to teach yourself the law. Because if you think about it, when you graduate or when you start your first internship, you know, this summer, you may be doing work in an area of law that you didn't take a class in. It certainly happened to me. I never took a medical malpractice or products liability class. I mean, I'm not anything specializing in that. So I had to teach myself what was the driving statute, the driving case law, what were the agencies that governed this particular area of law. Because I didn't have a clue. All right? And when I graduated law school, I didn't know how to research, even though I had been on the court. And what I think people don't realize, Aurelia, what if most first-year associates or somebody coming into a new firm, are they in court? Are they handling clients?
Yeah, the expectation is that you're going to be in front of a judge in a courtroom, but for the most part, you will be sitting in your office or in the library doing research most of your day.
They did a study. Okay, on what new lawyers do or what summer associates do after they get out of law school in their first job. 80% of your time is spent in research. All right? Now, here's the concern that your next employer is going to have. In law school, you're on LexisNexis or Westlaw, and it's free. All right? Your parents are paying for it. You aren't. Okay? Now, you start your first job. Now, think about it. Corporate law firms are businesses. Everything, they pay outrageous salaries. If you were looking at starting a corporate firm, at my firm last year, it was $165,000. For somebody who doesn't know how to research, somebody who's not worthy to handle a client, all right, somebody who's not going to be sent to court, which is what you would think an attorney would be sent to, all right? So those people are being paid to research. Now, if the only thing you're used to doing is getting online, on Google, which is so professional. Imagine if you went to a doctor and the doctor relied on what they found on Google to diagnose you. I don't know about you, but that's not somebody I would be paying good money for. All right? So you can see how impressive partner is when somebody comes back and they Google. All right? Not very impressed at all. You can see the impression you make on a partner, especially in this economic climate, if you go online on what was formerly Free Lexis and Westlaw, and you got into all these bad habits because they gave you gifts, pens and bags and bicycles or whatever they're giving you up, you're giving now. All right? That's all stuff to get you hooked. They offer it on, it's off of your library webpage. All right? So it's easy to get to. You take classes on how to do Lexis and Westlaw, but you're not taught how to cost efficiently search on Lexis and Westlaw. And in fact, at Dewey, the law firm I was at, 1,400 attorneys worldwide, 26 offices, and last year we had 170 first-year associates from around the world, 130 whom I was supposed to teach how to cost-effectively research, all right? And they were coming from Harvard and Yale and Stanford and Hofstra, you know, and St. John's and New York Law School and whatever. And just across the board, really, would you agree with me on this? You guys don't know how to research. You think you do. Let me tell you why you don't know how to research. All right? You come into class with your laptops, and the professor says, you know, I hope you've read the five chapters for today's class, right? Yeah, I didn't either. Okay, and those five chapters in the case book, we're going to tell you what the important case law was, or statutes maybe. It's most about case law, if you think about it in case law. And maybe it'll tell you a little bit about the regs, all right, that are relevant to a particular practice. But that case book tells you about the practice in this in the class that you're taking. And then, as soon as that book was published, it's out of date. Because as you're sitting here now, courts are churning out new cases on the topic, agencies are churning out new regulations and rules and forms. And 50 legislatures, plus the United States, are churning out new statutes. So as soon as that book is published, it's out of date. So the professor would be the one who would tell you, gotta watch out, there's a new bill coming up, they're going to completely change the law. Alright, let's think about it. If you read the newspaper, which I hope you do every day, alright, because you're a professional now, people expect you to be able to hold a conversation over lunch, alright, because you're entertaining clients at some point in your life. You're expected to be able to go in and talk intelligently to a partner or another lawyer as you're waiting to go in front of a judge or to do work. So I hope you're reading the newspaper every day, and maybe you've seen, you know, we're in the middle of an economic crisis. Gee, so at Dewey, which was a corporate law firm that specialized in securities, the big concern was they're going to get rid of the SEC. Noah Aurelia has a handout for forms, which we'll get to in a bit, you know, of all the different forms that somebody like you starting off in a corporate law firm would be dealing with all the time, because you're dealing with the agency that's governing a particular area of law. If that's swept away, those new associates and older associates have to teach themselves this new law. They have to find a relevant statute, case law, and regs. They have to find out how to treat the agency. They have to find out what the Bible is for that particular practice. We're going to show you about that too, because really, is it fair to say, just about every single practice, there's a treatise that explains?
Yes. We call it the Bible. So securities law, whether it's corporate, any kind of law.
And what would be in a treatise?
They would have those laws, the regulations, and then discussions that the author has specialized in, commentary. It would be helpful to you in your research.
And in fact, I think that's something that you guys are going to be covering in one of the subsequent sessions on how, basically, how to teach yourself the law. It's, if I were you, I'd be going to class two. Where do I start? Getting background and secondary sources. All right? So, as an attorney, you're going to be expected to defend your research choices, which you're going to be doing a lot of, all right, to a partner or maybe even to a client. And when you defend your research choices, it's going to be a bit different. I call a decision tree, where, you know, a partner gives you a problem, how do you get started? Do you want to spend a lot of money? I mean, let me put it this way.
Can you spend a lot of money?
Can you spend? Sometimes, if you're really lucky, you're on the pro se. Pro bono. I always get them mixed up. Pro bono, which is, what's pro bono?
You're doing the work for free.
For special types of clients.
Yeah.
And first year associates, young associates love to get pro bono cases, because that's actually when you get way before the rest of your peers. You get to show off by handling a client, even though it may be an indigent immigrant artist, all right, who can't afford a lawyer, but through a pro bono agency was referred to your corporate law firm or your law firm, and you get to go to court.
Those are actually the fun cases to work on.
They want pro bono cases. They, in a corporate law firm, the associates want immigrant cases, they want incorporating artist cases, they want landlord tenant cases. That's what they want. And if you can't bill, and it's going to cost you $45 to pull a statute that the judge wants you to look at before you come into court off of Lexis or Westlaw, that's $45 the firm is paying and not billing out. As opposed to, you just reach, everybody who starts in a corporate law firm gets what's called a desk book for a particular area of law, all right? This one's not a particular area of law, but there would be securities or tax, it's really big. Environmental, whatever the practices are that are specific to your next firm, they will give you a book. They expect you to pull the statute or the regulation or the form, which is probably in this book, as opposed to going online. this is one of the first things I would find out if I were a new associate at a law firm, is what's the desk book that people normally use with my particular practice? Because, let's see, if I have a choice between spending $55 to pull a rag, or statute, or paying nothing, just reaching to the shelf and pulling it down, hopefully that's a no-brainer, all right? Because in this economic climate, you want to make a great impression on a partner. You want to be known as somebody who can get the research done quickly, get the right answer. Let me tell you why it's important for you to get the right answer. All right? You're not being spoon-fed the law anymore by a professor and a casebook. You're not giving a new fact pattern that no one else has seen before. Maybe the laws have changed since you took your class. You're out there discovering new cutting-edge law. If you don't come back with the right answer because you didn't do proper research, that's actually a basis for a lawsuit against you in attorney malpractice. Attorney malpractice is ugly, because that means you're getting sued because you weren't accused because you're the lawyer. And you're being sued by your former best buddy, your client. So when you go to court, it's ugly. Alright? You're being tried as a lawyer in front of other lawyers, in front of a jury. Okay? You don't want to be in that situation. What you want to learn now when it's free is how to do research. Maybe take that advanced legal research class and avoid attorney malpractice. I used to come in with this multi-volume book of, I don't know, lawyer malpractice. This huge treatise filled with cases against lawyers from every single state for everything they can do. Everything that they can do to screw up a case. All right? You don't want to be one of the entries in that. All right? So learn how to do, keep with your cup, and learn how to do, okay? And learn how to do legal research. So now the firm's concern is that you're coming in, you don't know how to research, all right? You're costing a huge amount of money, $165,000 a year in salary or whatever you get for your first job, and you're billing out, paying $3,000 for something that might have cost $50 or nothing. Well, one of the stories I used to use to scare, with fear of God, into those summer associates coming in was that there was a legend in our law firm, all right? Remember, there were 700 lawyers just in that particular office in New York. So one of those lawyers, when he first came in, who shall remain nameless, when he first came in, like a knucklehead, he goes on LexisNexis or Westlaw, doesn't matter, they're both billed, all right? Went on looking for something. All day. No, he didn't find it. Took a shower, had lunch, went to the gym, worked on it some more. By the end of the day, he ran up a bill of $30,000. Right. What did he have to show for that? Sit. Now he goes with that bill of $30,000 from Lexis or Westlaw to the partner. How impressed is that partner going to be? Now what I thought was really interesting about this legend in our firm was that the guy wasn't fired. He must have had a client or something like that. So unless you have a really strong client base that you can withstand costing the firm $30,000, because there's two ways of billing Lexis and Westlaw. What are they?
Well, it depends on the firm that you're with. When you mentioned transactional billing versus hourly billing, the first thought that came to mind was my previous firm, Devil Voice and Simpson.
Okay.
At the firm that I'm at now, we don't do transactional versus hourly. There is a flat fee contract. So it's very important for you to go to the firm that you're going to work for and say, what type of plan do we have with Westlaw and Lexis? Do we have access to Westlaw and Lexis? It used to be that we only had Lexis access at Risk and Rather. Now we have both. Devil Voice, we had both, and we had transactional versus hourly. So it's very important for you to find out what type of contract you have and what you have access to.
And actually,
anywhere, not just firms.
And that's
so government, ABA, whatever. Yeah.
And that's a really good point, because you may get lazy in law school and only do Westlaw because they get the best kids or something. Or Lexis, because you have to attend that training first.
The analogy that I always think of, right, with Helen Wallace used to bring up all the time.
Our mentor.
The drug pushers. Lexis and Westlaw are drug pushers.
Right.
They want you to go on Westlaw or go on Lexis and get hooked on one of the two. So if you're hooked on Westlaw, when you go to a law firm, that's the one that you're going to want to use most, right? That's what they're trying to do while you're in law school. They're giving you the free access. They're getting you hooked on whichever product it is that you're most comfortable with, and this is what's going to follow you into whatever firm you go to.
And what's your nightmare? Your nightmare is you're hooked on Westlaw, and you're at a Lexis firm. Gee,
Oh, it's
or vice versa.
Seeing the reaction when they come.
It's called panic.
What do you mean you don't have black law?
Or let me take it a step further. You get recruited out of law school and you started a job, and you are fantastic. Everybody loves you. You're so good that another firm steals you away. All right? So you got used to this whole Lexus environment in your first firm, and now you're at a second firm a couple years down the road, and they're all about Westlaw. All right? So one of the things that we do in training with law firms is try to get you out of bad habits, which we were guilty of as well. All right? When I taught advanced legal research for 10 years at Brooklyn Law School, I didn't really teach the difference between transactional and hourly, because I go, oh, that's, you know, I'd look at it and be, transactional versus hourly, it's out there. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Then I go to a corporate firm, it's huge. It's vital, right? For you to understand the difference between the two, which we'll get to in a little bit, and I know, I'm sure, they're going to go into it later on in one of the other sessions, all right? Because we can't explain to you, between the two of us, three of us today, on what you need to know to research cost efficiently, all right? It would be unfair for you to put this burden on yourself to think that you can figure it all out in just one session. I would go to all the sessions because there are all these sessions are fighting against your experience here in law school. Because your experience is you come down, you sit, you have your popcorn, okay, professor tells you the law. I know you read the five chapters for today's class critically, thoughtfully. You're a good actor. And I know you asked questions and made your presence known during the class, right? Okay. And you probably research by Googling or by which is useful, and we'll talk about how it can be useful, you know, as part of a decision tree of how to do research. But you don't know how to teach yourself the law, all right? And that's why I really would take the advanced legal research class. The other thing too is, unless you're one of those rare firms that specializes in attorney malpractice, which remember is ugly. You don't want to be a part of that. I mean, you don't want to be on the receiving end of that, all right? Unless you're representing attorneys, think about who you're representing in a lawsuit. Maybe a factory. Maybe a hospital. Maybe a municipality. Maybe the government. Maybe the housing authority. In my career, I've represented hospitals in the city. I've represented doctors and nurses and practice. No, they weren't black, but enough. I'm sorry. Can we erase that? I represented municipalities, temples, things that sold steaks that fell on people's toes and they couldn't wear heels anymore. And, you know, people that drive cars. Probably all of you drive cars. You're all potential defendants. All right? People falling from buildings when they were constructing them or whatever. So, generally, you're not going to be representing attorneys. You're going to be representing people and businesses doing things. Now, how can you represent somebody unless you understand their business? Or, when I did med mal, I didn't know anything about medicine. So I had to teach myself enough medicine to be able to defend doctors and hospitals and nurses. All right? So I had to teach myself non-legal information. And what class have you taken which you learned how to find statistics or biology or chemistry or architecture? Yeah, I know. But that's what's out there. Because whether you're a trial attorney defending or opposing or prosecuting somebody, all right, you could be a lawyer handling a corporation or a business in-house, and you're going to be the one they're going to send to the courtroom to monitor the case.